Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in respect to coronavirus stress, I'm offering sliding scale online psychotherapy for all of you, or life coaching for anyone who's around the world, because I know that people are suffering and they need to release their stress and learn skills. So I'm here for you. If you don't want to have the individual sessions, you're more than welcome to come to the sharing meeting with Dr. Fujian Zain and other experts, other medical doctors, psychologists, and other people who are just sharing their experiences. That's just for you. That's going to be Thursdays at 6 p.m. Los Angeles time on Zoom. Go to my Twitter and Instagram to get the meeting ID. In this show, I'm excited to speak to Dr. Saeed Karandish. He's an internist with a specialty in nephrology. He is at the front line in New York talking about his experience at the hospitals and with patients and how he's taking care of them and how he's taking care of himself and what he can offer you. Then I will speak to a great person. I always have a lot of fun and I always learn from him, Bill O'Hanlon. He's a speaker, psychotherapist, author, and a musician. And we'll be talking about ways to find hope when things are challenging, just like right now. Okay. So come and join me. Check me out in Twitter and Instagram. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Fujian.com, Fujian.com.
So this week, I've been experiencing the shift from denial to fear to annoyance and frustration to fear and finally sadness. I have conversations with clients, friends, family, doctors, nurses, psychotherapists, and more, which relays the message that most people are now facing these changes and the losses that have brought into their life. So how has the coronavirus changed your life? What losses are you experiencing? What has changed in your life that you wished it hadn't? What changes are you welcoming, actually? What are your blessings and what are you grateful for? I'll tell you mine. I have never experienced being home for 15 days straight, never experienced not being with my friends and clients for this long. I feel the loss of socialization, being with my family and friends under the same roof, kissing them and hugging them and looking at their beautiful eyes. I feel the loss of sitting in the same room and caring for clients. I feel sad that I have lost the freedom to go anywhere as I wished like before. I feel sad that we have to move away from each other when we're at the grocery store. I feel sad that no one rings my home doorbell to come to my home. I feel sad that I can't go to the most wonderful restaurants that I used to go to. I'm sad and anxious about the financial stability for the foreseeable future. Sad and anxious that I lost my safety and security. And I feel sad that people take advantage of others in some realm. And I feel sad to see people that have lost their jobs and see the sadness and fear in everybody's heart and face. And I feel grateful that I have a great relationship with my husband, and we're sharing quality time together. I feel grateful that I have amazing friends and family whom are all safe and well around the world. Grateful for the technology that has allowed me to contact and share with my clients, friends, family, and the society and at large through media. Truly grateful for Zoom, Apple, Google, all of them, and many of these people at these companies who are allowing us to have close contact with each other. I feel grateful and thankful to all the doctors and nurses and hospital workers who are working so hard to keep our loved ones safe and healthy. Grateful to see great, compassionate people coming together to help each other. I'm blessed to have all of you in my life, and I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to support and be there for you and people that need it. So share with me and with someone and anyone that you like, and please don't stay isolated and connect via virtual contact and via your heart. We'll be right back with Dr. Saeed Karandish.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I am so excited to have Dr. Saeed Karandish, who's an internist and is on the front line of New York hospitals working with the patients who are affected by the coronavirus. And a great friend. I've known Dr. Karandish for many, many years, and have had the opportunity to hear about his experience. And I really wanted to share him with all of you, because I think that is so important to hear that. First of all, Dr. Karandish, I really want to thank you. Oh. And all of your colleagues and nurses and hospital workers, you guys are really are trooper in doing what you know, putting yourself in a lot of danger to take care of everyone's loved ones. And I know that it's a very, very hard decisions at times, and at times an easy decision. So first of all, I'm going to ask you to share your personal experience with all of this.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, and I appreciate that you give me this opportunity to communicate with people and talk about my experience, which was really unique experience for me. And I never could imagine that I have this experience with a huge number of patients and an unknown tiny enemy, the fact that I see every day in hospital about the patients and the nurses and doctors that they manage these patients. I see that how we face to our fears and our anxiety as well. We are similar to other people. We have the feelings that other people have. We feel like other people. But it's part of our duty to serve other people and to help them. And on a daily basis, I see that how we can be helpful for other people, and this kind of programs brings the mindfulness to the community, and I appreciated that.
So Dr. Karandish, I know that you you're working with the chronic cases, and obviously every day you're experiencing people who are dying and you could not save them. And you are also seeing that people are coming to the hospitals in a chronic way, but they are surviving. They're coming back home and they are going through the illness and coming. And you're facing all of the family members that these people are worried about them. And then we also have the group that might have the coronavirus and simply just feels like a cold or a simple flu for them, and they pass through it and there's no issues with it. And they other people who do have the coronavirus, they do get kind of more chronic, but they don't ever come to the hospital. So we have all of these different segments of the society, that are going through that if they are infected, and obviously a larger group that are not infected. What would be some of your advice to people who have not been infected and how to protect themselves, and the ones that have been infected, but it's not still in a way that they would get to the hospital?
First of all, let me mention about the statistics that we have about coronavirus, and it's not too bad. Really, it's just 1 or 2% of mortality is bad, but it still is not as bad as a lot of other diseases. And it means that most of the time, I see that people catastrophizing the situation. Even I see that anytime that we inform a patient that your corona test is positive, that patient already, I see that a lot of fears and anxiety in patient, and they think that they are dying. But even per statistics that we have, just 2% of people going to be in that bad level. At the same time, we have a lot of ways to prevent it. We have to have less exposure. And these things are something that we should be mindful about it. And I think people know about it and read about it on a daily basis. Just I want to bring some more items that it might be very helpful. The fact is coronavirus or most of viruses, they don't have the very efficient treatment, but we can have a good immune system to manage it. Our immune system should be optimized, and there are very simple ways that we can do it. For example, the first thing is have a good sleep is one of the best way to increase the level of immunity in our body. And when I'm talking about good sleep, I don't talk just about the duration of sleep. I'm talking about people have to go to bed before 11 o'clock at night. And that's very important. And have 8 hours of sleeping. Then we need to advise our friends and tell that make sure that you have good sleep. Some people think that if they sleep 8 hours, and they started at 1 a.m., it works, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. People need to get trained about the timing that they should initiate the sleeping. And besides that, there are other things that people should know about it. And one part is how they should manage their stress, how they should manage these bad news that they are hearing every day, and from the news, from the internet, social medias, and they get confused about so many bad news. But the thing that I believe in that is we need to reduce the level of exposure, and after that, don't follow the news. And to reduce the level of exposure, we shouldn't go to the places, to the public places. And we shouldn't be fooled by the fact that people around us, they don't cough or they don't sneeze. And we need to be mindful, and we should use masks. I know that these days some physicians, they are talking to, oh, you don't need masks. And I'm so surprised about it. You really need to have masks. And especially when you are inside the, like, public transportation or inside the stores that you are going to do grocery or to buy something, you need to have mask. And
something that you had said, Dr. Karandish, which was interesting to me, and I keep seeing now videos about it after you had said it, is that people said that, okay, if you are in line and as long as you're about 6 feet away from each other, things are safe. But something you said, which makes a lot of sense, and then they were showing it with the videos in magnifying what happens in the air, is that if somebody's coughing or sneezing at a location, for example, they're in a line in front of you, and they're going to have the droplets around them in the air. Now that doesn't fall, down immediately. So when you're now the next in queue and go in to step in that space, you're still part of the air that has all of those droplets. So that was fascinating for me to realize where it doesn't, when we are in everybody else's space right after them. So the concept of just being 6 feet apart is not going to cut it. So we really at these times have to be away from each other as much as we can.
I agree. And when I talk to most of these people with corona, when I hear from them that they haven't been exposed to any known patient, positive patient, and at the same time, they don't remember any contact with any person that is coughing or sneezing. And most probably, as you mentioned, these viruses is in droplets. And when people even talk, when commute talk in the closed spaces, when they talk, when they breathe, they can be the source of virus. And we think if they are distant from us, everything is fine. But we are in line, and when you leave, we go to their spot, and our face is exactly in the same place that they were breathing there. And that simply can be the cause of the disease. And because we know that the virus is going to stay in the air for 2 hours, the best idea is just when you have to go to grocery, go there at early morning, as early as possible, because during the day, you might have this virus in the environment and in the air, and it can make cause infection.
So, Dr. Bach, when somebody actually does get infected by a coronavirus and the doctor, they're not in a space that they go to the hospital, obviously, they're not that chronic. And all the doctors that I've heard, they say, stay home, stay put, stay isolated from everyone, and just remain at home. And there's really no medication to give you, because all of the medications that are being given are still being given to the chronic cases, not just people who are not that chronic. What would your advice be to the group that have been infected, whether they're tested or not, they have the symptoms, and they're supposed to stay home?
I think really doing the test is not important, because regardless of the test, we make decision. And as far as I see, having the test just adds to the anxiety level of the people. The thing that I advise is, as long as patient does not have shortness of breath, that patient is okay to stay at home. Or patient does not have other bad symptoms, like changing the color of the lips, they name it cyanosis, or this kind of symptoms that is very obvious. But 98% of patients, 99% of them, they don't have shortness of breath. Then they should stay at home and don't come to the hospitals, because when they come to the hospital, that's the actual exposure starts. And you need to always remember that we know common cold, we know influenza, and this kind of disease is already there, is in the community. And at this point, whoever that has cough, it doesn't mean that has corona. And even if it is corona, 98% of them, they shouldn't be worried about. At the same time, we need to tell all people with age older than 60 and with comorbidities like hypertension, or diabetes or obesity or coronary artery disease, that is very common. We need to make sure that they are optimizing their management. Like if they are diabetics, they need to control their sugar in a better level. Or if they are hypertensive patients, they should manage their blood pressure in a better, they need to optimize the blood pressure medications, and they can call their doctors and they're gonna teach them, they're gonna instruct them how they can do it. or if someone has coronary artery disease, needs to make sure that he has he's watching the diet, he's taking the medication on time, and they shouldn't be obsessive about their symptoms.
In 1 minute, what is it that you really want our audience to hear from you that you haven't had a chance to say?
The main thing for managing corona is having a good immune system. To have a good immune system, you need to have good sleep starting before 11 p.m. and also managing your stress. Don't catastrophizing the situation and don't make your body to secrete cortisol. Is the real bad toxin for your immune system. That's all.
You told me about 11 o'clock and I tried, and then two nights I actually did. And then it's kind of going again to the 12 o'clock because of all the movies that I keep watching. But it was interesting that at least it hasn't been one or two, because I used to just sit there with marathon movies now because I haven't had time to watch movies. And now I'm this past week, it's been a marathon movie. But thank you for giving that information to me. It's been useful, although I've only done it twice, but it's in my ear. So around 11, it's like, Pujan, get over it, go to the bed. And thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to speak with you. I know that we keep taking you from the hospital, come in and talk to me, and I really appreciate it. For everyone who's listening, Dr. Karandish will be at our Zoom, the Zoom that we have, the meeting sharing with Dr. Fujian Zain, an expert. He shares his time and his view with us. So come on down to the Zoom and, you know, share with him. And if you have any other questions from him, that's the space to be able to ask those questions. Thank you, Dr. Karandish. Until Thursday in Zoom training, I'll see you later.
See you. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Fujian.com, Fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'd love to connect with you. I've created a sharing meeting with Dr. Fujian and other experts every Thursday at 6 p.m. Los Angeles time via Zoom. So please go to Zoom.com and put in the meeting ID 689-941-5883. Go to my Twitter, Dr. Zain, or Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain, and connect with me and get all the information. See you there.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I am so excited to have Bill O'Hanlon. He's an empowering speaker, amazing speaker, trained in solution-focused therapy, author and co-author of more than 30 books, musician and a songwriter of more than 200 songs. And we have him today with us to try to find some hope when things are really challenging. And guess what? They're pretty challenging right now. Welcome to the show.
I was saying earlier, you know, when you said, "Oh, how are you, Bill?" I said, "Well, I'm on this side of the dirt." That's the positive we'll start with. Anybody who's listening to this, probably on this side of the dirt. So that's a good thing. That's one thing to be thankful for today.
Absolutely. At one point, I think that I had one friend who was told that he was going to pass away because of an illness, not corona. This was another illness a couple years ago. And I know that he sat for about 3 months. He would lay down every day for about an hour, meditating in what would it be like if he was dead. His wife was not happy. She called me and says, "Fujian, come do something with him." And then when I spoke with him, he's like, "Well, I know it's coming. Let me just experience the experience while I'm alive, pretending that I am, to see what happens." And it was interesting in how he was handling the news. And I know that there's a lot of fear of death or fear of illness right now that is showing up for people, especially the elderly. What would your suggestions be for someone who the fear of death keeps coming up for them?
Well, you know, years ago, there was this book written called The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker. And basically what I got from that is we're evolutionarily designed to be afraid of death, I mean, and being hurt and things like that. And he said he was a security expert for the stars in Hollywood. And he said, what I always tell my clients, if you open up a door in your apartment building and you're walking down the hall and the light's out, usually there's a light in there, and the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up that say, "Get out of there. There could be somebody waiting in the hall. This is danger." And he said, pay attention to that, because that's evolution that's trained you for, you know, centuries, and your ancestors survived. Physical danger is something you should be afraid of. So, you know, it's reasonable in these times when there are physical dangers to be afraid of death. But what we're going to talk about is how to find hope and in the midst of that. But I think the distinction is, when I was younger, I was very, very shy and very anxious. And I ended up becoming a public speaker. That's how we met. I just travel around the world 3 or 4 times a month for 30 some years. I've given over 3,500 talks in a bunch of countries every year. And my cousin, who knew me when I was growing up, is a psychologist, and she lives nearby. And she came to see me once. She said, "I cannot believe you're a public speaker, because you were the shyest, most anxious, quiet kid I ever met." And I said, "Well, yeah." But at a certain point, what Gavin De Becker said is, fear of speaking is one of the top fears. And that's, you're not going to die from speaking. So people get the emotional fears and the psychological and the social fears of, you know, are people going to reject me? Are people going to like me? Confused with the physical fears. So obviously, be careful, take care of your physical health, watch out for that physical danger, but separate that from the emotional stuff, like, I'm going to die if people reject me, or, you know, or if somebody doesn't like me. And so make that distinction. Sometimes you can reduce the overall fear when you reduce the fear of the stuff that's not actually physically threatening. So that's the first thing, is distinguish between your fears. And truly, there was a survey that was done, and it said fear of public speaking was the number one fear at the time. And the second one was fear of dying. And I'm thinking, they've got that way out of proportion, because you might feel like you're going to die if you have to get up and speak in front of people, but you're not going to. So I'd say first separate those two things. And the other thing, I don't know what happened with your friend, but I think there's a worry about being too positive. Positive thinking. If I just think positively enough, I won't get coronavirus. I mean, I just read the news, and some church had a big church meeting because they said, "We'll just believe in God and we won't get the virus." And now a bunch of people have come down with the virus. So, you know, I think positive thinking is a distortion. I think negative thinking is a distortion. What I call it, possibility thinking. So if I were telling your friend, I would say, sit down for, you know, meditate for an hour. Half of the time, meditate on what will I do if I get through this crisis, and what they thought was going to be a terminal illness is not a terminal illness. And what will I do if, you know, what will it be like if I die and I'm not with my loved ones, and what happens after death? I would say balance it with positive thinking, negative thinking. I call that possibility thinking. So that's the first thing, I think, to balance these, you know, it's challenging to watch the news as we're having this conversation, because it's pretty scary stuff sometimes. And sometimes it's worst case scenarios. And so I'm saying worst case scenario, best case scenario, think of them both and find the middle path.
In the midst of all of it, I think that what I found myself going through, also different emotions, Bill, this past week, which, you know, at the beginning is like a denial. Don't worry about it. It's all going to be okay. It's just the flu. And then, you know, kind of like being scared, and then finding yourself and everybody around you, like a lot of my clients lost their jobs. A lot of my friends lost their jobs. My practice was because of this, you know, had kind of shifted. I was online anyway, but some of it had shifted. So it would went from fear, and then like, oh my God, it's not going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be a month. It's going to be 3 months. It's going to be a year. So I know, and then recently, because of maybe the mortality rate going higher, or I have now clients who have the virus, and thank God they're all okay out now. But a different level of sadness suddenly showed up for me this past week. And a lot of that sadness came through almost looking at everybody else's fear or what they were going through. Or, for example, they didn't have a job and it's beginning of the month and they had to now do something and they had children and really experiencing their pain. So I think this is also something that when we're watching TV, even if nothing really changed that drastically in a negative way for our life, but just now being part of this epidemic and concept of everybody else being affected, I'm sensing a whole different concept of sadness, which I think it's appropriate, the compassionate aspect of us kind of coming through. What are your experiences on that?
Well, I mean, I think it does mean something different seeing it on the news than hearing from people you know. I have a friend who got very, very sick with coronavirus, and, you know, it was hard watching him go through it. I mean, he posted some videos. He's actually getting a little better now. Who knows? Because this thing can go up and down. But I think that makes it personal. Knowing people who've lost their jobs and don't have enough money to buy food or pay rent, that makes it really real, I think, for us. Watching on the news, we distance a little sometimes from it. I mean, sometimes it scares us and sometimes it's terrible and we do get sad. But again, for me, I was depressed when I was younger. And there was a certain okayness with just being with the depression. So I have two ideas, and I'm always using my two hands here, but one is acknowledging what's going on right now, emotionally and in reality outside yourself. And the other one is imagining the possibilities. So I call that an acknowledgement and possibility. And I would say, you know, we're both counselors, therapists, and we're almost like the new clergy for culture, because we sit with people and say, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's okay to feel sad, angry, you know, scared, numb, whatever it is that you're feeling. Part of our job is to give people permission to allow those feelings and let themselves feel them and be there. And at the same time, we want to give hope that that feeling won't necessarily last forever. These conditions won't last forever. So acknowledgement and possibility.
And what is it that when you look at your own sadness, and I know that you're an artist and you share and express through songwriting. What is it that pulls you through? You have a book, and we've talked about it, and I've said in your lectures, when you talk about a future that pulls you forward. So it's more like acknowledging where you are today, and then you design a future that it pulls you forward to where you want to be. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
No, that's good. When I was younger, I was very depressed and I almost killed myself. And a friend kind of asked me, why would you do, you know, she was really upset and really worried about me. And I said, you know, I just don't think I can make it in this world. I'm so depressed. I can barely function. I think I'm too sensitive for the world. You know, a lot of artists, obviously, I felt like I had no skin on and I was all exposed nerves. And she said, I said, I just can't be around people. All I want to do is write, because I was writing poetry at the time and I wrote music. And I just don't think I can make it out in the world. I can't make a living. I can't be around people. I'm too shy. I'm too sensitive. When they say something, it hurts too much. And she said, look, I have three aunts that live in Nebraska. I'm their favorite niece. They've never married. They're going to leave me all their stuff when they die. And they have these farmhouses because they bought farms as investments. If you promise me you won't kill yourself, I will promise you, you can live in one of these farmhouses rent-free. You can grow your own food, which in my delusional state at 19, I thought I could do. And you could be on your own writing poetry, writing your songs. You don't have to earn a living. Please don't kill yourself. And an interesting thing happened for me at that moment. I was still depressed. That didn't go away. But I wasn't suicidal anymore because I had a future that had the possibility of something different happening and being out of so much pain. And so I think it's incumbent upon us at this time in your show to acknowledge the pain, acknowledge the fear, acknowledge the sadness, acknowledge whatever else is going on, the danger, and then step into the possibility that someday this is going to be a story you're going to tell your kids or your friends or somebody that you meet. Yeah, I lived through this time and it was really hard. It was really scary. And there were a lot of sad things and I lost friends and people, you know, and people went through really hard stuff. And here's where we are now. And so imagining that future was so important to me when I was suicidal. And I made it part of the kind of therapy that I created called possibility therapy, where I would acknowledge what was going on with people and then invite them into possible futures. And I think that's the balancing, again, my two hands, acknowledging where you are and then imagining a future in which things are better. So right now it's pretty hard because our vision is filled up with all these horrific things and bad things are happening and people are scared and sad and angry and, you know, whatever. And then, yep, acknowledge that. And then what could be sometime in the future? How could you use some of this? One of the things I do is I transform it through art. I have four kids and I lost one of my kids to an overdose and an opioid overdose some years ago. And I transformed it through music. And I also, somebody said, you should post this on social media. I said, no, this is a really private thing. I really don't think that's appropriate. And after a while, I just was going crazy. So I did post something about it. And I got an outpouring of support that it was shocking to me because I'm a little private about this kind of stuff. And it really was part of it. It does take a village to heal grieving and sadness sometimes. It's okay to ask for support. And I'm the typical guy who's just going to power through it and privately suffer on my own. And it was really amazing to be that vulnerable and then feel that level of support. So I think the good news about this crisis is that we are connected by social media. The bad news is there are some negatives to social media, as you know, and I know, but to be able, I've seen so much support and outpouring for people on social media. And even people who said, I lost my job and I can't pay my rent. People say, give me your Venmo or your PayPal. I will send some money. I have some extra money. I will help you through it. What would you have done before that? I mean, there wasn't a way to reach out to people or be vulnerable like that. And so I think that in some ways we have a community that we can draw upon if we're willing to be vulnerable and open and, you know, and just say, I need help.
I totally agree with you. When you were sharing your story, what stayed for me was that a person who came to you and said, through their generosity, that I believe in you and I'm going to create it for you so you believe in yourself. And then we also see so many right now that organizations are getting created, which they're buying masks for the physicians and they're sending it, or landlords that are saying, don't worry about it and I will carry it for you, or you pay as much as you want and I'll carry the rest. Or examples that you talked about. And the way that we have come together, it's beyond any type of, you know, culture and race and color and, you know, countries and borders. And I think there's a beauty that shows up suddenly with this level of connection that it brought us so much closer to each other. The one thing that is supposed to isolate us from each other brought so much more of a closeness in heart and in giving, and you know, the generosity and the prosperity and abundance that is coming from everyone. There's a beauty in it. Like, it brings up a lot of love into the society. So yes, we have a lot of fear, but then we also experience so much love and connection beyond with each other. I've heard people saying that just even the restaurants that are closed, just order them from them anyway, just to give them money. We have people who sometimes obviously come and support us to make our home beautiful and clean. They're not going to come because you don't want people to come, but at least still pay them, even though you don't want them to come, because there's no other salary for these people when you have it, when you have the opportunity. So many of these little places that we used to go and really pay for it, and that was their income, if we still have our jobs and have the capability, is our time to also support and help. And I think it really, really looking at that part of loving pulls everyone out of the space that we are, whether we're connected and we want to help somebody else, or we open our hand and heart for somebody else to help us. And I love this level of connection that is happening for everyone.
I think, you know, again, as people have said it, I'm not the first, but, you know, the virus showed us how connected we are. The whole world is connected. People travel all over the world. We're international, and we travel through our countries. We're definitely connected biologically, and we're connected to the earth. I mean, you've seen these pictures of pollution clearing up because people aren't driving so much. We're all connected, and we're all part of this thing. And as you said, I've seen so much kindness and love and generosity in the midst of suffering that it's been heartening to me in a certain way. One hopes. I went to New York City after the 9/11 attacks. My brother and sister lived there. And I used to go before that. And afterwards, I used to live in the Midwest, Omaha, Nebraska. Very, you know, Mayberry kind of place. People were friendly and said hi to each other. New York City, my sister, the first time I went there, she was like, do not make eye contact with people. Do not say hi. You're going to get us killed, you know, kind of thing. It was dangerous in New York at that time. And after 9/11, about 2 months afterwards, people were like in Omaha. They were kind with each other. Somebody looked upset on the street, they would walk up and say, are you okay? To a stranger. And so I think the terrible stuff that's happening has that other side. That's why I said the yin and the yang of it. And you were just talking about that. The amazing kindness and generosity that can evolve or be evoked during these terrible times. There's also cruelty and unkindness, obviously, but it's so much in the minority, and it really helps you believe in humanity again, in the kindness of people and in the connections, as you say.
And it's interesting because I think right before this, the politics of the world was going so me, 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 and only about me, and it only needs to fulfill me. And I know that at times we were sitting as like, where is the humanity going toward? What's going to happen to all of us? Nobody really cares what happens with the climate change or, you know, with the homelessness and this and that. It's just like, just me, me, me. And it's amazing with one little virus, the whole world just shifts, and not only me, 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 but let's take care of each other. And that was really interesting.
It's heartening. Again, you know, years ago, I read this science fiction story of these high-level scientists that said they'd been studying dolphin language. And all of a sudden, they came with a breakthrough, and they said, the dolphins have this advanced civilization. They're giving us messages. We're going to destroy our planet unless we get together. And they started issuing these, you know, injunctions. It's, you know, forget countries, forget political parties. You need to get together or you're going to wreck the planet. And everybody started listening to the dolphin, you know, philosophy, and they started following it in the world. They started dissolving countries and they made a world peace Congress. And then at the end of the science fiction story, it turned out these scientists had just gotten together and cooked up this scheme. They couldn't actually talk to dolphins. They were just trying to get people together and stop being so divided and stop killing each other and stop wars and stop famine and stop pollution and things like that. So I think in a weird way, the virus is like those dolphins. It's getting us to get together in strange ways.
So I want to bring you to your art, and if you could share your art with us, tell me what is the process of you expressing yourself? Because I know the process of the way you have expressed yourself through your books, and I've witnessed your lectures. You know that you bring a lot of great storytelling, and you really bring a lot of the shared experiences that you have, and bring it from a lot of different, you know, scientists and psychologists and the masters of the world, and bring it together in that expression. What is the process that you go through as a songwriter expressing who you are and giving it as a gift to the world?
Well, it's interesting because we talked just at the beginning. I used to write when I was unhappy, because when I was happy, I was just going and living my life. But when I would get internal and unhappy, I would sit down at the piano or the guitar and play. And I wrote songs on my own for many, many years, decades. And then I got serious about it a few years ago. I thought, you know, this one unfulfilled dream I have in my life. I've had this May. I was on Oprah. I wrote all these books. I traveled around the world from a little guy who was shy and depressed. This was amazing. I had this amazing life, but I had one little unfulfilled dream. It's like, you know, I always wanted to write songs, and I became a therapist instead of that. So now I'm in my dotage and I have a little more time and a little more money. I thought, well, I'm going to get serious about this. And I Googled, you know, songwriting workshops and songwriting online, some online and some in person. And one of the things that they said was, you can get so much better if you learn from masters, which I did. I went and studied with masters. But also if you co-write, like Lennon and McCartney wrote their songs together and Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote their songs together. And I thought, I've only written songs on my own. How do you do that? So I started going to workshops in which I met people, and I started going to Nashville, and they treat it like a job. At 10 o'clock in the morning, you show up and you write a song till 1. Take lunch, 1 to 2, 2 o'clock to 5. You write another song. I'm like, how do you write? I mean, I've occasionally had songs come to me quickly, but to be creative on demand, it's back to the conversation we're having, the power of community. I might walk in without any great ideas and someone will start playing a little riff on the guitar or on the piano, or someone will mention an idea they have or what they want to write a song about and be like, wow, say that again? That's great. Play that again? That's great. And so for me, it's been a totally different songwriting and creative journey to do a collaborative art than the individual art that I did when I wrote on my own. I only wrote one song last year on my own. I wrote 162 with other people because I was making those songwriting appointments to learn how to tap into that flow and creativity that I know you've talked about. On demand, when you walk into a room with sometimes people you don't know, and it's like a therapy session to be in the room with these people, and you all spill your guts and you say, well, I got my heart broken like this one time, or I fell in love like this one time. And the fact that I was a couples therapist for many, many decades, I had great stories. Obviously, I wouldn't reveal any personal details, but stories about how couples actually did their lives and how they got in trouble and how they fell in love and how they refell in love. And it's amazing because most of the songs I write are love songs. I'd say 80 to 90% are love songs. And so it's wonderful to be able to write about that and transform my hurts and my pain and my joys and my love and put it into music, which is in every culture in the world, and put it into something. So my goal is to get my songs on the radio. My first song, weirdly, that we're talking today, in 2 days that I ever got into a TV show or movies, which I pitch my songs to occasionally, is going to be on in 2 days, on April 2nd, on the some MTV reality show I've never seen. I don't watch MTV. Mm-hmm. The Bush Family Brew, it's called. And one of my songs called Dreams Come True. which is, of course, my songwriting dream and what we've been talking about in the future. I dreamed a while ago that I'd be a songwriter, professional songwriter, and it's happening. I've had two of my songs released on albums that other people have done, and I have a video out now by a group called Kings of the Earth, and it's called Like a Ghost. The video just got released last week, and I'm starting to get some progress in my songwriting career, and I'm having a great time. And it does. It's a process of transform, like all art. It transforms the individual, hopefully, to something that speaks to everybody, the individual experience. So I'm having the time of my life, and I feel like, you know, you and I have talked about brain science. I feel like my neurons are buzzing in a way. I'm in my 60s, and they're buzzing in a way like I was when I was in my 20s, and I was first really enjoying learning music and playing music. So
You also talked about, again, the way of the power of being together and how much this power of being together just entices us, that type of a connection that we have and this the in-between space that things go back and forth and just moves each one of us and makes us grow. Would you share one of your songs with us?
I would. I'd probably have to send it to you to put in, but maybe I could play something. Sure.
That's sweet. Thank you.
I don't know how well it would come across because of the internet, but I could certainly play something.
Yes.
All right. I'll play a heartbreak song. All right. Wow. You surprised me. All right. Here we go. This song I wrote with one other guy, a guy named Mark Dolan. It's about a heartbreak. All right, it's called Give Up the Ghost. Seems like years and years since you disappeared, left me here alone. Up there on the steps, thought I saw your dress, looked again and you were gone. Smoke. Wish I could let you go and give up the ghost.
Thank you so much. That was
Thank
beautiful.
You for asking.
We would love to have your songs and play it on my show. So when they're actually out, let me know and give us the right, and we'll definitely put it on our show. Thank you so much, Bill, for being in our show. Everyone, please go to BillOHanlon.com. To get all of his wisdom in all different types of forms. And for all of you who have been out there listening and watching us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Bye-bye.